The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Two Chairs No Waiting, episode number 752, Otis Day, 1988. Two Chairs No Waiting is brought to you each week by the fine folks over at weaversdepartmentstore.com. Drop by over at Weavers and you can check out the brand new items they have, like Ernest T's Stress Rocks. That's right, some of you folks here in the chat room may have seen, or here on the podcast, have seen me getting ahead, hitting the head with a Stress Rock by Mrs. Weaver. Well, you can buy your own now over at Weavers. They're the prettiest rocks you ever did see. While you're over there, you might want to check out some of the t-shirts. Head over to weaversdepartmentstore.com and see what all they got over there. Two Chairs No Waiting is also brought to you by donations from listeners just like you. The executive producer of episode number 752 is Terry Newman, and the Patreon patrons of the week are Bob and Pat Mundy. Hello, everybody. I'm Alan Newsom, and I want to thank our patrons and our producers. I want to thank you for being here with me in Mayberry. We're going to have a lot of fun. We're going to be talking a little bit about some stuff that was brought up in one of the voicemails I didn't play last week. We had some feedback that didn't play, but it has to do with this great article that we're going to read. So we're going to kick off with that. We may kick off with another one I did not play last week and then get into that. And then we'll play some Mayberry trivia. So hopefully there'll be something here for you all to enjoy. So I had a couple of voicemails I didn't play last week, and one of them is this one from Frank. So Frank, go ahead.
Hi there. This is Frank from Malden, South Carolina. I am watching the Andy and Opie Bachelors episode, and in this episode, Peggy sings a song. It made me think, obviously, Andy Griffith and Jim Nabors have released musical albums over the years, but I'm curious if any other cast members or guest stars may have put out music. It would make for an interesting discussion. Would love any insight that you may have, because obviously I think Peggy had a very nice voice. But just figured I'd put it out there, see if there's any insight you could provide. As always, thanks for all that you do.
Well, thank you, Frank. I believe I may have played that one last week, because I remember us talking about George Lindsay had an album that he put out, and Ernest T. Bass had a song he put out about department store Santa Claus that you might be able to find. That's Howard Morris. And of course, you had some stuff with Maggie and them, but there weren't really albums and stuff. So, no, there wasn't a whole lot of people that had albums outside of that. Jack Prince, I think we talked about as well. So I think I did talk about that one last week. I could swear there was one of these I didn't play last week. And so I was going to try to hit that one this week, but I guess I did play them all. So that's good. So, all right. So let's head into the new one from this week. The one I know I didn't do. So now this one is from somebody that was anonymous, because they didn't tell me who they were. And they talked right up into the time where it cuts them off. So they never told me at the end either. So this is from an anonymous listener to talk about Otis Campbell Day, or Otis Day is one of the things he talks about. So let's hear from this listener.
Hey, thank you. To begin with, it just dawned on me after hearing your wonderful podcast of the opportunity my son and I had back in the late 80s when Hal Smith came to Nashville, Tennessee for the group that had to do with the, I think they were called the Mayberry Fan Club. I've forgotten the exact name. But anyway, we got to go to, I want to say it was at Belmont. And we got there rather late. The place was packed. Everybody was dressed exactly like Otis. Well, there were four seats in the back that were roped off. And finally, some guy came in and sat down. I said, well, they can tell us to get up. So we, my son and I, sat down. A lady came and asked the first gentleman to leave, but let us stay. Well, within a few minutes, this gentleman sits down with a old seersucker blazer and a worn-out straw hat, and it was Hal Smith. And for about 30 to 40 minutes, he and I got to talk because nobody recognized him. He had lost a lot of weight. It was toward the latter part of his life, and everybody's dressed like him, and they're all excited. And so nobody realized it was him. And we talk, and one of the most genuinely nice, gracious human beings you would ever meet. And he told some very interesting stories that I think your listeners would want to know. A lot of those scenes where they're going at it, like Barney's in jail, those were all ad-libs. They were very close friends, and they could get things like that going. And he talked about on the set how Andy was always playing practical jokes on Don Knox. And it was just fascinating. And that was the original coat and original hat from the show he was wearing. Well, needless to say, when he got on stage and when he stood up and they all recognized him, the place went berserk. And he got on stage and not only did he give us a sense of Otis, but also Winnie the Pooh and Barney Rubble, any number of characters he portrayed. So I know this is much longer than you wanted, but I thought it was something that ought to be remembered because not only did he come to that event, but he was incredible. And what a gracious man, and ought to be remembered as such. And thank you for all you all do, because as I've got to.
Well, that's where you got cut off. So thank you for giving that call. It's a great call. There's a few things I want to clarify in it, and then we're going to go into the article. So he talked about the fan club, which, you know, as a listener of this podcast, if I am not making sure you are aware of the Andy Griffith Show Rerun Watchers Club, which, you know, he couldn't remember what the fan club's name was. We need to be stressing that more often. The Andy Griffith Show Rerun Watchers Club, because that's what you would find at imayberry.com or tagsrwc.com, which is the Andy Griffith Show Rerun Watchers Club, tagsrwc.com. Those are twin sites or sister sites for the fan club. So that's what he was talking about. That's who put on the event or helped put on the event. And we'll be talking and getting more details about that. It was actually held at Vanderbilt. We'll talk about that as well in a minute. He also mentioned talking about the scenes like when they were doing Barney's in jail, being ad-libs. Well, I think he's misremembering slightly. I don't think they were ad-libs. They were more likely things that they brought up or thought up during the read-throughs, and then they were actually put into the script, or the script was modified for that to be in there. Because every one of the cast members that we've ever talked to says there are no ad-libs, and you really couldn't do ad-libs very well because they did a three-camera shot. So there were three cameras. I mean, it was not a three-camera shot. It was a one-camera shot. With three cameras, they're shooting different angles all at the same time, and you might be able to do a little bit of ad-libbing. But when you're shooting one camera, you have to say the lines, and then they move the camera, and you have to say them again, and then move the camera, and you say them again. So you get three different shots, perhaps. And so there was very little in the way of being able to ad-lib, because you'd have a shot on Hal Smith, you'd have a shot on Barney in the jail cells, for instance, and then a wide shot of both of them in the jail cell so you could see them both at the same time. So they would have to do the exact same thing every time for each take of the scene. So they probably didn't ad-lib them, but I do believe they brought them up and came up with ideas that maybe were then added into the script. That's very likely. And he mentioned that they played practical jokes on one another. Completely, that is definitely true, that there was jokes and laughing, a lot of laughter going on the set between Andy and Don and other people. I've heard that. And he also mentioned, the anonymous caller, the hat and coat that Hal Smith was wearing during this particular event were the original hat and coat that he wore as Otis. That particular hat and coat is now in the Andy Griffith Museum in Mount Airy, North Carolina. You can see it. They donated that years ago before it was even in the current facility, the museum, and it has been there ever since. And it's definitely, it's been used, the hat. It's kind of squished down. They have a couple of hats, one that's not quite as worn as the other. But let's get into this story that I found, because this is what it got me looking into this. And so I went and found the article. So back in 1988, in April the 13th, 1988, the Andy Griffith Show Reunion Watchers Club put out a issue of The Bullet that's it's called, well, it was the April 13th, 1988 version of The Bullet, but it has an article right on the front page, Otis, A Great Day. And that's what we're going to read through here. So let's get us a little bit of background music maybe going. There we go. This is Otis A Day. Now, this is written by Jim Clark himself. And he says, Otis Campbell Day was celebrated. See what he did there? Celebrated? You know, because he's in a jail cell. Oh, that's good. Yeah. Otis Campbell Day was celebrated on Saturday, February 13th, 1988, in Nashville, Tennessee, as a way to honor Mayberry's lovable town drunk. That's the who, what, when, and where, and the why of it. Now, here's the how of it. Hal Smith brought Otis to town to spirited cheers of Mayberry fans everywhere. Folks hadn't seen this much commotion since that ornery fella came down from the hills to throw a rock through a window about a year earlier. So stepping aside, about a year before this, there was Ernest T. Bass Day in Nashville, Tennessee. So that's what he's referring back to. Continuing on, a callous Otis jetted into town on Friday afternoon and had no sooner landed than he was at the airport. He was on the airport phone ringing up WSM radio to let them know that he was in town. Then he was off to Nashville's public radio station, WPLN, where Beethoven's Fifth was discussed with new meaning. He then zipped over to Nashville's great Andy Griffith Show flagship station, WZTV, to tape the third annual Mayberry Marathon. Occasionally, we'd see glimpses of Hal Smith, but mostly Otis. No stopping yet for this man in a hurry. He rushed over to the Nashville network to join host Ralph Emery for a live cable cast of Nashville Now. Then it was over to the Music Country Radio Network to visit with Kyle Cantrell, Jim Driver, and Ernest T. Bass in the person of Steve Culberson. Finally, Hal and Otis got to pipe down and have a nice, piping hot, Aunt B-ish meal and prepare for the festivities the following day. And what a day it was. Hal began Saturday with several press interviews and then headed over to Vanderbilt Law School. The irony can be pretty ironic sometimes. Where an overflow crowd of about 600 goobers were ready for roasting. Nashville singer-songwriter Chuck Burns opened the show with a rendering of one of his dynamite tunes, Mayberry, co-written with Don Huber. Next, Doug Dillard, the banjo playing Darling Boy. Yeah, that's who it was, Doug. And his band, Doug's band, showed the audience why they're one of the nation's premier bluegrass groups. Doug and the band favored the crowd with several familiar tunes from the Andy Griffith Show, including one of Otis's favorites, Dooley, because Dooley was a good old man. Then a staggered Otis. Then in staggered Otis. So, guys, up until this point, our caller was sitting back there probably talking with Hal, because nobody realized it was him back in the back of the room, because everybody was watching the festivities there in the front. So this is when I guess he was finished talking to him and he had to start. So then in staggered Otis from the back of the auditorium. I'm showing a picture to myself, so I had to stop that. So from the back of the auditorium, he swept his way to the stage, saluted the crowd, and announced that he was glad to be in Louisville. I'm sure he noticed his voice. He then declared, "I don't drink anymore." The crowd had a momentary doubt until he continued, "But I don't drink any less either. But I don't drink anymore." The audience then knew what they were there for. Hal and Otis tag-teamed their way through the presentation that delighted fans who had come from far away, from as far away as the Barney chapter in Greensboro, North Carolina, and Key West, Florida, to see the day. Wearing his original Otis hat and jacket, Hal reminisced about his years on the Andy Griffith Show and shared insight about his profession and his entire career. He delighted young and old with many of his cartoon voices, including Goofy, some of the Smurfs, Winnie the Pooh, and Owl. Otis chimed in with personal recollections of Mayberry. Doug Dillard then joined Hal on the stage to answer audience questions. Soon, it was time for the Otis Campbell look-alike contest. They say there's one in every crowd. Well, this day, we had three. So, a fellow named Rob Cochin won the best Otis beard stubble. Gene Thomas won honors for best Otis costume. And Hunt Harvey won the best overall Otis. Though Hunt swore he wasn't really in the contest, declaring, "I just came to fill my vase." Steve Culberson showed up dressed like Ernest T. Bass for the contest, but he was told that he was about a year late. We'd already had that contest a year ago. But he didn't take that too well. His last words to the contest judges, Ken Beck, Pat Embry, and Doug Dillard, were, "I'm going to get you." Finally, to make sure Otis had a place to spend the night, it was Saturday after all, Deputy Rick Jones from the Davidson County Sheriff's Department presented Otis with a key to the county jail and instructed him to just let himself in that evening. Just to make sure Otis was taken care of, Deputy Jones also deputized him. Hal and Doug graciously signed autographs for everyone who wanted one, waiting long after the formal program was over. Otis, of course, signed publicity stills, but the day wasn't over yet. It was soon time to dash over to the Opera House for filming of Backstage at the Opry with Keith Bilbrey. While there, Hal was greeted by fans and Opry folks, including Grandpa Jones, Little Jimmy Dickens, Jumpin' Bill Carlisle, Ricky Skaggs, Ricky Von Shelton, Jack Green, Herman Cook, Grant Turner, Connie Smith, Porter Wagner, and the king of country music, Roy Acuff. After the Opry, it was time for Hal to be able to relax. He joined a group of goobers eating pizza and watching the Mayberry Marathon on television, and then turned in for the night in Nashville's cell number 1, which just happens to be located at Vanderbilt Plaza Hotel. Sunday was a day for all to rest. No band concerts, just relaxing day for members for remembering the day before. That evening, the Roy Carlson family blessed their hearts, fed Hal a home-cooked Valentine's meal that would have made Aunt Bee proud. All too soon, it was time for Hal to fly back home. It's been a memorable occasion for the Andy Griffith Show, Rio and Rogers Club, and everyone who shared in the visit could say with glee, "Hal, I knew you. Hal, I knew you." Like, hallelujah. Hallelujah. Hal, I knew you. Oh, that's good. So that's the article, guys. This is from 1988 from the Bullet, the actual printed newspaper. Now, this was my copy that I received back at Auburn, Alabama, at 51 Barron's Trailer Park, where I lived when I was going to college. And as I was looking through this and found this article, I came across this. There is a letter in here from the Rerun Watchers Club itself. And I thought this was kind of neat because evidently I was a new member. This must have been when I joined. So I thought this was pretty cool because it says, "Dear new members," that would be me, I suppose, "thank you for your interest in joining the Andy Griffith Show Rerun Watchers Club. Welcome to the club. We like to reply to each inquiry about the club in a more personal way than this, but because of the large number of people asking to be club members lately, we're using this formal letter in order to respond more quickly. I hope you enjoy your first copy of the Bullet." So this was my very first copy of the Bullet. This is so cool. "The official newsletter of the club. We publish the Bullet every once in a while, usually about two or three times a year. There's information in the Bullet about what the club does and how we operate. As our club name states, we are Rerun Watchers. So mostly what we do as a club is watch reruns of the Andy Griffith Show. The Andy Griffith Show Rerun Watchers Club has voluntary membership dues, and we suggest an amount of $3 or so per user per year for annual dues to help cover the club's expenses, like publishing the e-bullet or the Bullet. Dues are important for the continuing efforts of the club, but payment is left entirely up to the discretion of each member." Isn't that great? How many clubs have you been in where you got to decide if you were going to send them the dues or not? That's pretty nice. Man, the Rerun Watchers Club is great. "Your name has been placed on the membership list of the chapter nearest you," which was Mother Figure chapter. That's what I was in. "The chapter will contact you about any activities or planned events." Well, the guy who started that chapter and me were in the same trailer, so that was pretty easy. "The club was recently started, has recently started offering an official club t-shirt." Oh, I didn't get that, though. "We have back issues of the Bullet," which I did get every back issue, "and a variety of bumper stickers. Details for ordering all of these are providing it in the newsletter. For now, I would simply like to welcome you to the Andy Griffith Show Rerun Watchers Club and hope that you enjoy your association. In the future, we should be able to respond to your correspondence in a more personal way." It says, "P.S. Alan, Rob Jones sent in your dues with your name, Jim." So that is in this particular issue. It was in here. So this was my very first issue of the Andy Griffith Show Rerun Watchers Club newsletter. Wow. Isn't that pretty cool? So it was April 13th, 1988. This was my first Bullet. Wow. All right. I don't know if that's exciting to you guys, but it was pretty cool to me, I thought. That was pretty cool. All right. So there you go. You got to hear the letters in the head. We got to see some of the stuff with Otis. There's pictures and stuff I was showing. If you watch the video version, you'll be able to see the pictures and some of the content of the actual Bullet for that day. It was pretty cool. All right. So now we're going to play some trivia. So we got to play our trivia music. Are you ready for that? There's our trivia music. Thank you to the VW Boys for the music that you are hearing there. All the music tonight has been from the VW Boys. So let me pull up our trivia questions. And so these are going to be multiple choice trivia questions. We are ready to go. So if you are, here's question number one. Otis Campbell's wife is a lovely woman named A, Rita, B, Marge, C, Doris. That's A, B, and C. That's it. So Otis Campbell's wife is a lovely woman named A, Rita, B, Marge, C, Doris. All right, you should know this. Otis Campbell's wife is, you can pause if you don't want to hear the answer yet. Her name is A. Rita. Rita, that's her name. All right, number two. Otis once bought a cow, thinking it was a horse. It cost him A, $20, B, $10, or C, $25. So Otis once bought a cow thinking it was a horse. Oh, paint. How much did it cost him? Was it A, $20, B, $10, or C, $25? So pause if you don't want to know the answer. You can catch up later. All right. The answer is Otis once bought a cow thinking it was a horse, and he paid A, $20. $20 for his horse. $20. All right, number three. How you doing? These are supposed to be fun. I hope you're having a good time doing it. As a I knew it was a good buy. Otis, your horse gives milk. Yeah, all right. Number three. Otis is a direct descendant of A, Edgar Masters, B, Seth Mayberry, or C, Nathan Tibbs. Otis is a direct descendant of A, Edgar Masters, B, Seth Mayberry, or C, Nathan Tibbs. What is your answer? So lock in your answer, and here comes the answer to the question. What is your answer? The answer is Otis is a direct descendant of C, Nathan Tibbs. Nathan Tibbs Fife. Yeah, Nathan Tibbs Fife. All right, number four. Otis sometimes has an invisible dog for a pet. And the name of the dog is A, Spot, B, Sport, or C, Maggie. Otis sometimes has an invisible dog for a pet, and its name is A, Spot, B, Sport, or C, Maggie. What's Otis's dog name? His dog is named, you can pause if you don't want to know. It's named A, Spot. It's Spot. Spot's his name. All right, number five. It's very convenient, all these are Otis questions, isn't it? Otis's day job is A, foreman at the freight yard, B, a stockman at the feed and grain, or C, a glue dipper at the furniture factory. Otis's day job is he's a foreman at the freight yard, that's A. B is a stockman at the feed and grain, or C is a glue dipper at the furniture factory. What is your answer? Otis's day job. The answer is C. He's a glue dipper down at the furniture factory. All right. Number six. Otis's favorite cell is cell number one, cell number two, or Otis isn't picky in either one. So is it A, cell number one, B, cell number two, or C, Otis isn't really picky. He doesn't care which one he gets put in. So Otis's favorite cell is, which one is it? Cell number one, cell number two, or he doesn't care? The answer is his favorite cell is A, cell number one. Cell number one. You have cell number one and cell number two and so on and so forth. All right, number seven. Otis once sued the county, and his lawyer was named A, Lee Drake, B, Charles Keyes, or C, Neil Bentley. Otis once sued the county, but his lawyer's name was A, Lee Drake, B, Charles Keyes, or C, Neil Bentley. What was Otis's lawyer's name? All right, so he sued the county, and his lawyer's name was C, Neil Bentley. Neil Bentley. Number eight. All right, you got to get this one right. Finish this Otis quote. I came to fill my blank. Was it A, vase? Was it B, crock? Or was it C, flask? Finish this Otis quote. Was it, I came to fill my blank? Was it A, vase? Was it B, crock? Or C, flask? All right. So I hope you got your answer, because the answer is, I came to fill my vase. That's A. So you got that. You got it right. So number nine. After enduring a day's hard labor, being supervised by Aunt B, Otis nicknamed her A, Queen B, B, Bloody Mary, or C, Sarge. After enduring a day's hard labor, being supervised by Aunt B, Otis nicknamed her A, Queen B, I like these, B, Bloody Mary, or C, Sarge. I like both. I love all those. Those are all good. All right. So the answer is, after being imprisoned over at the Rock, Otis called Aunt B, Bloody Mary. That's what he said. So Bloody Mary, that's B, is the correct answer. B. The letter B, not Queen B. B. All right. The last one, number 10. Our last question, number 10. When Barney gave Otis the ink blot test, Otis saw a bottle, B, a butterfly, or C, a bat. When Barney gave Otis an ink blot test, Otis saw a bottle, B, a butterfly, or C, a bat. What's the answer? When Barney gave Otis the ink blot test, Otis saw C, a bat. Otis, you were standing naked before me. I was not, Andy. All right, guys, that's 10 questions, all about, pretty much, I think, all about Otis, weren't they? They all were. Every question was an Otis question. How convenient that our episode tonight was all about Otis. How about that? So I hope you guys enjoyed that. I hope you enjoyed the questions and had fun and enjoyed the all the other content we gave you there as well. So I would love to hear from you guys as we wrap up here. You can give me a call at 888-684-8415. You can email me at floyd@imayberry.com or head over to twochairsnowaiting.com and just figure out over there what you might want to pick up. There's all kinds of ways to get in touch with me. Head over there and do it. Folks, I want to thank everybody that helps support the podcast. We have folks that are on Patreon that support us each week. We have folks that donate one-time donations to us, and many of you buy from Weavers. And I want to thank you so much for all of that, because it all helps keep this podcast going. So, folks, until next time, we'll see you right here on Two Chairs, and y'all have a great Mayberry week. Good night, everybody.
When you drive a vehicle so reliable it's backed by a 10-year, 100,000-mile limited warranty, you stop thinking about what you can't do and start doing what you never thought possible. Visit your local Kia dealer today to see what you're capable of in a vehicle that inspires confidence around every corner. Kia, movement that inspires. Call 800-333-4KIA for details. Always drive safely. Limited inventory available. Warranties include 10-year 100,000-mile powertrain and 5-year 60,000-mile basic. Warranties are limited. See retailer for details.